I've got a quick question for you, alright? I wanna hear your thoughts, I wanna know what's on your mind. I've got a quick question for you, alright? The answer's not important, I'm just glad that we could talk tonight. So what's your favorite?
How did you get?
If there's an answer, they're gonna find it. I think you'll have a great time here.
So, hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and comedy writers ask each other questions and give each other answers. I'm one half of that podcast, senior writer for Last Week Tonight, author of How to Fight Presidents, and friend to many, brother to two, uncle to six, dog parent to one, Daniel O'Brien, joined as always by my co-host, who is second to none, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, I wrote this one out this time.
It was really good.
Thanks,
man. It was really beautiful. What a turn of phrase. And also, thank you.
You were 5 minutes late, and I spent that time thinking, dog parent to one, second to none. Do I have time to make this entire thing rhyme? And I didn't. 5 minutes is not enough time for me to make that happen. But in the future, look out for a completely rhyming intro to this show.
And you did friend to two, right?
Brother to two.
Oh, brother to two. I thought you said friend to two, and then that I was second to none, which meant I was the first of the two friends that you have in your entire life.
Oh, no. Yeah, that would have been sweet, but no. It was friend to many, brother to two.
Okay. And so I'm one of those, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's funny, Dan, that you should mention writing, because I was thinking the other day about this podcast. And
why?
I was like, how do I make it better? What do I... Like, I'm always trying to improve. And it's like, how do I improve on what we've already got, which is perfection? Mm-hmm. It's tough. But I was like, if I was objectively coming into this podcast between a comedy writer from Last Week Tonight, comedy writer from American Dad, what would I want from it? And decided in my mind, it wouldn't be, how's my workout schedule? It would be writing advice, or it'd be like something about writing at least.
Oh boy, we are coming at this episode in particular with from very different places. You should go first.
As a writer, I think maybe we can tie it together, though. I think maybe, right. Maybe there's a way to stitch it together. And that's sort of what I want to talk about, is like that Frankenstein process. I mean, I don't think it's too early to just jump into the episode. It's not our usual format where I ask a quick question right away, but I think let's just try it. Daniel, quick question.
Shoot.
What's your outlining process? And I don't mean just like, if you were going to write a pilot or something like that, like how are you doing flashcards, or are you writing it on a whiteboard and breaking the story? I mean, like before you even start writing, how are you putting all those ideas in your head into one thing and being like, oh, okay, here's the connective tissue, here's how it will all make sense, and then starting to write? Like, well, how do you get there?
You should probably go first. I think that'll be a more helpful answer for our audience.
I've been thinking about it because I'm currently working on my story at American Dad. Mm-hmm. And again, struck with this panic that I always forget about. This, where we're breaking a story, we're breaking it as a room. I have great writers working with me who are like way better writers than I am and understand story way better than I do, who are so good at like articulating what a story is missing, or where something needs more, or where already anticipating like, no, that act's going to be too full. That kind of stuff I don't see coming at all until I'm sitting down and I'm like, oh fuck, they're right. There's every single time you write something, and when you're done writing it, you're like, I'm great at this. And then you start again at writing, and you're like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I don't know how to do this. And that whole process early on where you're so untethered to anything, where you have maybe like six ideas that all feel somewhat cohesive, but you don't know how to get from one to another or anything, but you're like, I like all of these. I'm very precious about these scenes or whatever. And you're like, how do I link these? And then how do I put an emotional arc through it? And all the whole process feels so daunting and overwhelming. And it's impossible to chunk out the way you would with any other project where you're like, well, I'll work on a little bit at each time because you have to see the whole big picture at the very beginning before you even start writing, because you need to know that the story has a real cohesion and arc to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, so it's like,
no knock on people who do other jobs, but I was visiting my parents the other day and they have people building a deck in their backyard, and you could just see like the frame of what it's going to be. And as a writer who feels like I'm always in the dark, I'm like, oh, you guys just started with the frame, huh? Ooh, novel. What are you going to do next? You're going to pour some concrete? Is that how decks are made?
Yeah, seriously, tell me, guy. Yeah, it's so daunting and bad and scary. And I was trying to like think of what to even equate it to. And I was like, oh, I've had this feeling before. And I get it from anytime in my life where I've redecorated an apartment or like tried to redo something on a grand scale for a house or a room, where I'm like, all right, we're going to do new furniture. We're going to do a paint on the wall. We're going to do art. Like there's all these little elements that need to go in, and you have a few pieces in mind where you're like, this is a color I like, or this is like this is a picture frame from my wedding that like, I want to build something around this. And then as you're going, you're just like, you have no idea what's going to look right together, because it's impossible to tell until you can see it. You can like try and see it in your mind's eye and like kind of envision like, do those colors even go together? And like, or you're looking at stuff in a magazine or whatever, light fixtures. And you're like, I can't possibly foresee those light fixtures in that room unless I close my eyes and try really, really hard, but I have no idea what they would actually be if we try to like slam them together. And that terror that you feel, because you also have to purchase these things. So there's like a huge investment to it. And that's how I feel with writing as well, is like, as soon as you choose one door, you shut six other ones that like could have led somewhere way more interesting. And so you're deciding along the way, you're making these big, ultimately kind of arbitrary decisions, where you're like, I hope that this direction this is right. And mm-hmm. So you just start building. And then along the way, I mean, eventually it always works out, because you end up, even if stuff doesn't work, you've got that, you're like, oh, fuck. All right, well, I spent a bunch of money on that, but it's just not going to work. Okay, now I got to find a way to like redo this part or restructure this. And occasionally it is terrifying, because you get to a point where you're like, you know what? None of this is going to work. And I just spent so much time and energy on it, and it's not going to work.
It's incredibly frustrating, because no one likes to think, because in a very tangible way, it looks like work has been wasted when you have to throw out however many pages you've written of something, or however many ideas you've conceived. But like the very positive and a spin that I genuinely believe in is, it's not work wasted. Like, you had to do all this to eventually solve what you didn't realize was a problem at the time. Like, the stuff you threw out leads you to, like, oh, okay, now I know what it can't be, which helps point me towards what it has to be.
It's just so defeating to constantly start from scratch. I mean, you're not starting from, again, where you're like, I'm building that same thing again I built before. I know the mistakes I made last time. Now I know how to build it. No, every single time there's brand new and terrible problems that you're dealing with. And you're like, well, fuck. And sometimes you can't articulate the problems a lot of the time. You just know something's not working. And I'm in the hole. I'm in that right now, where I'm like figuring it out. And you just feel like you're building a dock out in the middle of the water. And you're like, well, I hope that I find a place where I get like some shore where this will fit.
Yeah. that stinks, man. I don't know why I'm feeling, everyone who listens to this podcast should know that I also have imposter syndrome and struggle with writing a lot. And it always feels like I'm reinventing it every single time I do it. Not reinventing the craft, but like reinventing my process. But you know, I'm in a pretty good place with my work stories right now, so I'm in a rare window of feeling decent. I'm going to try to not sound like a bad writing coach. Just be like, just pen to paper, man. Just do it. Just like, you got this. Just sit down and do it. But that's a little how I feel. I mean, I was split mind with writing in general. And to get one thing out of the way, outlining it last week tonight is a very specific team-based process that won't be useful for our purposes. So when I'm going to talk about outlining, it's divorced from that job and is more about like other shows I've written for Cracked or stories that I've written or pilots that are being written right now. Disclaimer out of the way, I'm of split minds with process on this. And I thought it was interesting that you talked about redecorating a room because part of my brain thinks about it like packing for a big trip, which is always an overwhelming process for me at the start. And I will often do what I'm doing right now because I've got a trip coming up to Florida where I just like, I put every option, almost every piece of clothing that I own on a bed and I just stare at it for a while and my brain goes kind of crazy about it and I never really know how to start packing and I reinvent it every time where I make lists and the lists are, they start from answering questions of like, well, what are things, what am I going to want to do when I'm there? What might I be interested in doing and what do I definitely need for that? And just breaking it down into like,
yeah,
there's this many days, so I need this amount of running shorts. And this amount of running shorts means I need this amount of running shirts and socks. And maybe I'll golf, that means this. Maybe I'll swim, that means that. And it makes the whole thing less daunting. That is your there's no art in it yet. I'm not thinking about what outfits look good together or anything other than function of like what will I definitely need in this? And when I'm figuring out a story, that is one half of my brain doing that kind of work of what definitely, you know, are you writing a pilot? What definitely is important to you to address in this pilot? What are the things that need to happen in not this story, but any story? And like, once you start to articulate what those are, you have an immediately less daunting process. The other part of my brain is the frustrating part that I can't control, which is I do a lot of free writing when I'm breaking things. I just will put the people that I want in a room together and have them talk to each other and try to this is the, I always say talking about writing in any kind of like mystical terms because it was the kind of talking that made me feel very discouraged as a young person who wanted to be a writer because it seemed like it was out of my hands. But it is something in later life that I certainly gravitate towards that George Saunders, the best short story author of all time, talks about a lot, which is just you need your characters to be smarter than you. And that requires the real training that comes in for being a writer, which is... I'm working so hard to not say muse, but like making yourself available to listen to the voices in your head, to what the universe is telling you, and to just sort of like trust that your skill isn't in coming up with the best idea or a life-changing bit of dialogue. Your skill is to be able to listen and to know when to pay attention and to seize on the opportunity when the thing does fly into your head from the ether.
Well, that strategy is very similar to the way David Milch talks about it. David Milch, who wrote Deadwood.
Oh, yeah.
And he talks about it as if your characters are sound, like if you're creating people who feel very real, then it's your job to get out of the way and just let them react how they ordinarily would. And I kind of agree with that, but also like there's things I want to get out. So you're like, I guess so. Maybe I'm just not building good enough characters for that. But I think you're right. I think that there a lot of it is like if you when you're before you're even putting pen to paper, where you're deciding on, oh, this is an interesting scenario I've created. Let's see how the characters react to that. And then you're just sort of like watching it a little bit in your brain, right? You're like, well, where does it go? What is happening? Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, that would be a nice piece. And I feel like that's where you're collecting those little nuggets along the way that you're like, I would love to hit this. I would love to get to that. And then trying to figure out what that connective tissue is. And by the end, you're like, yeah, that was clearly the only path there was.
Yeah.
How did I not see it early on?
But there's that. And this is more like mystical George Saunders stuff. When you talk about how it was, how did you not see it? My belief is that it is, the magic part of your brain does see it, and it's guiding you towards there. And that's your experience as someone who's read a lot of things and talked and thought about a lot of things that you've read and written a lot of things. That is the training that you've been doing to like get the magical part of your brain to work with you instead of against you, and to get the tactical part of your brain ready to listen to it and understand it. Like, it's the same M. Night Shyamalan talks about, and I know he's a divisive, I think he's great. He talks about the amount of drafts that he did for The Sixth Sense and how it didn't land on him, the twist ending where Bruce Willis is dead, until like the very last draft. That was the only thing that clicked. And when you hear that, it's like, what the fuck were you writing? What did you think was good about that story without that? And that's like, he didn't think it was good. That's why he kept doing drafts. But like,
right,
the magical part of his brain that I hate talking about is like, it's always in there. It knew that you needed this twist, and you needed to get there by this long circuitous process. That was going to put you through 10 or 11 drafts that didn't make sense. But like, something in your brain and your bones and your hog were telling you like, no, there's something in this story, and you haven't unlocked it yet. And it happens to be the most important part of the story. And you'll get there.
Right.
If you trust the muse.
There's a movie that came out while we were working at Crack called Seven Psychopaths. And you and I started talking about it before either one of us had seen it. But yeah. Or maybe you'd seen like the trailer or something like that. And there's a moment in that movie where there's like a... You might have to help me here. There's like a monk who's an assassin sitting on a bed.
Yeah.
What is the scene?
A Martin McDonagh movie, Seven Psychopaths. Colin Farrell is a writer. He's writing a movie in this movie that is called Seven Psychopaths. And he knows he's got the title. And everyone is like, great title. What's it about? He's like, I'm not quite sure yet. And you get little snippets of like, he knows there's going to be seven psychopaths in it. And one character he keeps writing is this... We don't know anything about him. He's this Asian assassin who's in a hotel room, and he's angry, and he's got a bunch of weapons, and he knows he wants to do something, and something happens. Colin Farrell doesn't know what it is, but he keeps coming to this, and he tells, like, he meets one of the other seven psychopaths, Sam Rockwell and Christopher Walken and all these other different psychopaths, and like, he's collecting stories from them to flesh out his movie, and he keeps coming back to like the strange puzzle pieces where it's like, okay, he's from Tibet and he's angry and there's rage and in this scene he's with a woman, and in this scene he's not with the woman, and I don't know where I go from there.
Yeah.
As a writer, he doesn't know where he goes from there. Yeah.
That, and you and I remember us talking specifically about how that felt like a very good encapsulation of the process of writing, which is you have these elements, like these in your hands, you've got just this pile of stuff where you're like, this is cool. This feels like something important. Like this, like you have all these things where you're like, I'd love to use all of this stuff. I just don't know where any of it goes. And then by the end, you not only have to make it look cohesive where you're like, oh, now I'm getting from A to B to C, but you also have to make it look like it couldn't have gone any other way. Like these pieces are crucial. Like the story would fall apart without them. And so that's when a story really clicks, is when you've got these amazing moments where you're like, and we had to get to that amazing moment. Like the story couldn't have gone another direction. And boy.
Right. And by the end of the movie, Christopher Walken saves that bit of writing for him, where he's like, I've been thinking about this monk and I don't think he is a psychopath. I'm spoiling by saying monk. I don't think he is a psychopath. I don't think he's violent. I think you're getting the portrait of this man who's got rage, but he's a monk who I believe is self-immolating.
Okay.
Is that where the story goes? And it's like, what if he's not an assassin in a hotel room? What if he's doing this? And what if he's doing this act of pain and violence in a show, a demonstration of peace defiance, and an end to violence and all that. And it's one of those things that in the movie clicks for Colin Farrell, clicks for the audience, and it's like, oh yeah, I had the pieces. I wasn't building the Lego thing right. I was building it without instructions, and I didn't realize that it's a castle instead of a tank or whatever.
Yeah. That's actually a really good way of putting it, is that you've got Lego pieces and no instruction. Because you've got pieces that are like what is clearly the windshield of some sort of spaceship. And you're like, okay, I know where this goes. But like now I got to build all the shit around it. I'm just kind of,
you look over and then suddenly there's like the bottom jaw of a T-Rex and it's like, oh no, I think I got to start over.
But then you build it.
But it's so much of a spaceship.
We've been doing it long enough that no matter how you build it, you can then look at what other people have built around you and you're like, it's never going to look like that.
Yeah.
I know that no matter what I build here, there's a ceiling to it. Like I know I could only conceive of how this would look so much in my brain. Like there are other people who are clearly, they can see the cathedral before it's built. And you're like, how? Yeah. How did you know? Maybe they didn't though, is what I'm saying. I think that maybe along the way, we're all just sort of like, you try and build the best foundation that you can so that when you rebuild over and over, the whole thing doesn't collapse.
Yeah.
And everybody's doing it the same way. And no matter what, you think, okay, well, maybe this one will be painless. I will build a great foundation and maybe I'll get lucky and everything that goes on top of it will be exactly where it needs to be. And it just never happens. You're always going to be like, I should take that whole part apart and rebuild over here. And that process is, it just is like lonely and dark. I think more so than even the writing. The writing, you can really lose yourself into and get very excited about it.
Yeah.
But the process of figuring out what you're about to write is just it's overwhelming.
Yeah. I remember we had, when we were all younger writers in the early days of Cracked, we had the benefit of not knowing what we're doing, so we didn't know how hard it was yet. And we also had the benefit of writing much shorter things. Like Agents of Cracked ended up being great training for me because we knew that the show, if we were allowed to do it, was going to be 3 seasons. Like we started with very bare bones. There are 2 coworkers. One of them's wacky. One of them's nerdy and not wacky. And it's us 2. We wanted 3 seasons. Season 1. This was after like long conversations to get to boiling it down to the simplest possible thing. Season 1, enemies become frenemies. Season 2, frenemies become friends. Season 3, frenemies become lovers. That's a very simple, basic thing because we had no money, so we couldn't have too much ambition. And also it was just like a very straightforward, simple way to write. Okay, that's our season. And then every episode we tried to treat as... Almost every episode. We got wacky towards the end. But for a while, we tried to treat every episode as you're solving one problem within that episode. If the arc of season 1 is enemies become frenemies, you know that you need to have some element of that in your thing. But in the meantime, this episode is about this person wants to just do his job, but this person wants to give him a nickname. Like, the problem is nickname. How do you solve the problem of nickname? And it's like, great. All I need to do is solve this problem, and then I'm done with my episode. And like through that, you figure out who the characters are because you, I mean, again, that's, I guess that's more of the George Saunders, M. Night Shyamalan, close your eyes and be ready to listen to whatever it's telling you. And then you get like your fun little bits of jokes that you expand and turns a phrase that end up turning into character, and then oh my god, suddenly it's a person. Suddenly I know who the Michael character is in this show, and now I can play with him to help solve whatever episode 2's problem is going to be.
Yeah, now he's got runners. Now he's got bits that are like that he's going to go back to. Yeah, totally.
And now you know how he sounds. Now you like you have voices for people. It was the same deal with rom.com. That was a series that I felt the most in the dark out of anything because I was writing that completely alone. And nothing existed yet. And I had to do the same thing as I did as we did with Agents of Cracked, where I was like, okay, what is this show about? This show is about, there's one person who thinks relationships can be solved with science, and there's one person who thinks relationships can be figured out with love and heart. It's brain versus heart. Okay, every episode's about that. This episode, brain wins. This episode, heart wins. This episode, they realize it requires a little bit of both, and like, they're not characters yet. It's just person A and person B talking right. through these problems, and then they slowly, it's like, all right, this character, what happens if the science character goes through a breakup that challenges her ideas? What happens if the heart character does XYZ? And the same way with Agents of Cracked, they, if you get them in a room long enough, they start talking to each other instead of me just writing, person A says science is good, person B says heart is good. You know, you get them in a room together and they start saying things, and suddenly you have, oh, this is Josie and this is Max. Oh, I understand them now. Now it's not solving a problem. I mean, you're still solving a problem, but it's also, now you're solving a problem, but how would Max specifically with the flaws that I have discovered because he talked to me about them, how would he handle this situation?
Right. I think when you're starting from scratch like that and you've got a character, you're really working with broad strokes on somebody. You're like, okay, this person is exclusively left-brained and this one is like right-brained or whatever. And so you're like, all right, well, I'm working only within those parameters. And then as you're going, you're like, well, I'll cheat a little here. And as you do it, you're like, oh no, this is a really good character trait. This is like a mutation in the gene that is much more fun. So now that becomes like, now you've got some color to the character. And then you continue to build that way where you're like, well, what if they have like a crazy opinion you wouldn't expect from somebody who is exclusively into the objectively looking at love. And you're like, okay, well then that now becomes intrinsic to who the person is. That's what I would try. And like when we would write After Hours, there's a lot of piping that needs to be done in After Hours. You have to get across these whole ideas, but you can also play with the characters a little bit. And like every time that you defy who the character is, you're building that character more. In a way that I think I love doing. That was the only element of After Hours that I liked writing. It's like, oh no, what if Katie hates the police?
Yeah.
You know, like somebody who has like this real distrust and hatred towards authority out of nowhere. And it's like, okay, yeah, where is that born from? Let's find out what that is. And it's fun.
It's fun to add new layers, and it's also fun After Hours specifically because the characters had gotten so defined because we were doing it for 100 years. Finding yourself realizing, oh, wait a minute, Soren would never say that. Katie would never say that. Like, when you're starting out as a writer, you don't think about that because I think the puppets will say what I tell them to say. And then
I have a point to make.
It becomes a real joy when it's like, no, that doesn't make sense. Soren,
right.
The character Soren wouldn't do that. This person we made up.
Right. And it may become more crystallized in your brain. Also, part of the reason I was asking about this is that I've worked at my job long enough and worked with everybody in it with it long enough that when they're breaking their own stories, it's very interesting to see how drastically different people approach this. I was looking for commiseration on my experience because I think you and I have sort of a similar writing style. But there are people, like I know some people at my job who come in with an idea to a room when we're going to break a story for them. And this one woman will come in with basically a feeling. Mm-hmm. Like she's like, I want to capture this feeling. And you're like, yeah, I would never have started that way, but I love this. I love thinking about a story in terms of like a feeling. And so you're like building around that. Or I know another guy who is very logical about it, the same way that you pack clothing, where from the jump, where you're like kind of like pitching out an idea that's very loose. He wants to know, okay, well, what would be the first act blow? Like, where's the turn in the second act? Like, he wants the structure of it because that's important. You have to know how it fits within the structure. But so many of the times people are like, I'm not worried about that yet, man. I'm just like, this is all loose. We're still free flowing. But for him, it's really important to know, if that's where you want to start, then where do you get to by the end of the first act? Then what do you get to by the end of the second act? How are we going to finish it? And it's just people think about it in completely different ways. And it's what they need in order to get it right.
Yeah. Because you'll very often, you're talking about writers who are all writing for the same show. they're going to arrive at the same place. They're not all writing the same episode, but they're all going to eventually write a great episode of American Dad at the end of it. It is wild to think, like, all right, off I go to sit at my typewriter and write act one, beat one, act two, beat whatever. And then someone else is like, I want to just sort of go in a field for a while and spin around and I'm going to read my favorite book. And then in 2 weeks, you'll have an episode.
Right.
I do like playing with both of them a lot. And I think that as I get older, I'm leaning much more towards letting characters talk than I did when I started out, which I think is just something that comes with age and experience, and like trusting that the outline parts are in my bones somewhere, and just having more fun with following strange impulses. I was really fascinated with an interview with the guy who wrote Barbarian, that movie we both love. That hopefully it's been out long enough now that we can say spoilers, but if you haven't, just stop listening right now, because it's best to be enjoyed with absolutely no information. Okay, stop listening. Now the rest of you keep listening if you don't care about being spoiled or if you've already seen it. It was a guy who'd never written horror before and didn't really have an interest in it, but just decided to start writing it one day, and he's writing the beginning of it, which feels very much like it's like all tension between this guy and this girl who are strangers, and they're forced by circumstance to be in a house together. And there are so many red flags about this guy and this house, and you really think like this big guy, and it's specifically played by a Skarsgård who has historically played nothing but monsters in everything he's ever done. He was Pennywise, etc. And that all works in its favor, and you're just waiting for like, this, when is he gonna break this girl's neck? This girl is like clearly in a bad place, and like it's raining all the time, and it's so the house has got this weird dungeon basement, and like he's not taking any of her concerns seriously, and apart from that, he seemed too good to be true, and you're all like yelling for the girl, get out of the house, this guy's clearly evil. And the writer in this interview was talking about how he got so bored with what he was doing, because he was like, yeah, it is obviously this guy who's going to be the killer. I've seen this 1,000 times. I'm so sick of it. Fuck it. Out of nowhere, a giant naked lady runs out of the darkness and smashes his head against the wall and kills him. And just like wrote that into the script. And then from there, we're just like, now all right, what? Well, I didn't see that coming. Now what happens? And the movie, when you understand that that's his process of just like, what is a surprising thing I could do next? It makes total sense. You couldn't predict what's going to happen in the movie, but it does, like that flavor of just, I've set up this very clear and compelling thing. What is a zag that I can make now instead of zigging? And he does that. We stay with this woman until we don't, and suddenly we're across the country following a different character for a while. And all of it is just this writer who is clearly just having fun free writing and following impulses. And then I'm sure he did a tremendous amount of work to tie it together at the end. But it really is like a process of writing that's very inspiring to me, of just like, yeah, let's try that. Let's just go and see what happens. And when we get bored, a giant naked woman runs out of the darkness and kills one of the main characters.
Yeah. So anyway, I got 6 giant naked women who run out of the darkness on my script. I got bored a lot. I do like, I mean, if you're not on a time crunch, you don't have a deadline. The idea of writing a script that way, where as soon as you start writing, it falls into a path.
Yeah.
And it's like a path that previously exists, like no matter what, because it's in your brain and you've watched so many things that you know, oh, I'm working towards this. Like, it's clear that this is the end result, or this is where the final destination of this line of plot goes. Yeah. And to be like, no, and dig yourself out of the rut and be like, let's just try something brand new. Let's see something else, is a really fun way to start a script. But man, so scary, and not a way that you can outline for in any capacity, where you're just like, I would like to just start writing. I would like to see, as soon as it starts to feel predictable, do the exact opposite. And now what? Where are we? And by the end, like, there's no guarantee by the end you're getting anything cohesive.
No. And I had a big murder my own work and throw out a script moment. This will be frustrating because I'm nobody, and also frustrating because I'm not going to give enough information about what these projects are. But like a pilot that I was working on about people who work at a summer camp, and a few of the kids at the summer camp, worked on it for a while and like refined it a bunch of times. And I have some writer friends that we get together and swap pilots and give each other notes. And all of my writers pointed to the same thing. They were like, this, like, we understand this script and we're happy with it and everything. But one of the little kids in the show is so strange. She's such a weird fit for this show. I really don't think you need her. And everyone's like, yeah, she's really intense. She's like a 12-year-old girl, and the show is about the counselors, and this weird, intense 12-year-old girl just feels like a strange fit. And I was like, you're right, she doesn't belong in this world. This world is too small for her. I need to build a bigger world just for her, and just throw out absolutely everything else and pivot completely to this strange character that spoke to me louder than any of the other ones.
That's
going to be my barbarian.
Yeah, you found what was actually interesting in writing it.
I mean, who knows? This might be wrong, too. I don't know if it's interesting. It wasn't interesting to any of the people who read the script.
Man, that's wild. Anyway, the process is, I'm over complaining about it. I mean, I know that it always works out. I'm being hyperbolic a little bit, but I...
Right, and you're not
allowed...
I know
that it works.
You're not allowed to know that it always works out.
Yeah.
Because then it...
And because I can't see it, I can't see it now. So I'm like, okay, well, what am I even making here? Like trying to keep all of the pieces together and making sure that it's going to fit within the structure, that it's going to have there's all these other undercurrents of it as well. Like with a narrative anyway, where you might want something that's very plotty, like something where like, and now the character is driven to this because they have no other choice. And now we have to get to this. And now we have to move on to here because these are the only logical decisions that could be made. But then you also need that whole emotional arc to a story that's the undercurrent of it, which is a character starts at zero. Something needs to happen that drives them down. They fall into the pit, you know, like they've got to...
Yeah.
They have to fall somewhere where they're not comfortable and things are not good. And so like, and it's their own doing most of the time. And then they're like in them trying to dig their way out without doing any emotional work. They're digging themselves deeper. And so these solutions can't work. And then by the time they finally fix themselves, like then they're allowed to ascend again through the other side. And usually they come out at zero again, or they come out a little bit on top, a little bit better. Like that's in every single story.
Yeah.
And you need it. And that's... this whole other element that you could write the best plotty story in the world. And then you look back and you're like, oh, you know what? There's no way to layer the emotional story over this. Like we have to redo a bunch of it to get that in.
Yeah. That was a devastating note for a pilot that I wrote that I sent to a producer friend of mine who was just like, who like actually makes things happen. I sent a draft to him and he was like, the jokes are great. This is really funny. Which one is the main character? It's like, what? He's like, what? And I was like, well, it's to me, it's clearly the first guy you see and the guy who is like the lead of this particular group of friends. And he's like, okay, well then he needs to learn something this episode and he needs to want something. I was like, Oh, you mean like in movies and TV shows when characters learn things and want things? Yeah. No, that's a great note.
Yeah,
I'm going to do that right away.
The audience wants to want that it for them. And like it's ingrained in us to want that. So when a character doesn't like Dazed and Confused, I found so hard to watch when I was young. Cause like, I thought the main character was the pitcher kid who doesn't want shit. He's just this kid who's just like living out this last day of school. And I was like, by the end, I was like, that's the end of the movie. We didn't go anywhere. We didn't do anything. And that a lot of Paul Thomas Anderson movies I have a hard time with for the same reason, where he's, instead of giving you a character who's clearly got that, he's just like, hey, you're going to live with these people for a little bit.
Right. This is just a slice of life.
and so you can make stories like that. You can make really great stories like that, but it's the majority of stories that an audience who people who aren't writers themselves or constantly thinking about this kind of stuff, they expect something from a story. And it's usually that. It's like, you want to want the same thing as the character. You want to want it for them.
Yeah. And they need, and they should learn something at the end of the episode. And like, it's okay if they forget it by the next episode. That's fine. That's the Simpsons. It's all right. But they need, in the first act, they need to say, boy, I really hope I get Varsity. And by the last act, they either need to get it and realize they didn't want it, or they need to not get it and realize that's okay, or they need to, a different option. I don't know. I'm not going to give away this clearly well thought out Varsity show that I'm working on.
Steve wants to be Varsity. Hold on. Haley? Yeah. totally. Yeah, it's a thing that, here's the thing that drives me the most crazy. When somebody reads a thing that you wrote and that you feel like you was very good until they bring up a detail.
Yeah.
When somebody will be like, I don't like any of these characters, which is immediately a complaint I bristle towards, because I'm like, well, fuck you. You didn't like Tony Soprano either. Like, no, you don't like any of those characters. And then what they're really telling you there is, I don't feel anything for them.
Yeah.
Like I don't care like what happens in the places where I'm not supposed to like them. Yeah. But I also don't want them to get what they want. And so you have to like, you're like, oh fuck, I have to give these characters something. Like I have to, it's like being Frankenstein and being like, oh right, where's the lightning? Like how do I make this character feel more alive? That like people will actually care about this.
Yeah. What if the character was on a, crutches? Would you feel bad then? Is that no? He needs like a personality. Okay, damn it. All right. I thought what maybe if I just gave him an eye patch.
What if I told you this character had a dog? Does that do anything for you? Oh, they love that dog.
Right. It's great that some of the dumbest shit like that does work on me. There was that 310 to Yuma movie, which is just a very basic cowboy movie. Christian Bale is a slower cowboy. Russell Crowe is like the ultimate bad guy cowboy, or like villain cowboy, whatever. And they are at odds. And you heard so much stuff about how ruthless Russell Crowe is, and he dresses in black and he is advertised as the bad guy. And there was a scene really early on in the movie where he's just drawing a picture of a bird, and it's like a really well done drawing. And it's clear that like, oh, he could have been an artist if things didn't go. All right. He's complicated. I'm sold. We don't ever need to show him drawing again. I will remember this detail and be sad when he dies.
Those moments in movies I'm sure this is true for you. They've been ruined for me. Like I can't just watch a movie and feel that anymore. Instead, I'm like, oh, locking that away. There's a tool for the arsenal. I'm watching Last of Us, which we talked last week about how much we loved, and how you can, in the last episode, this isn't giving anything away. A girl goes to sleep, or she's like lying on her bed when it's raining, and it's like raining really hard outside of her room. The rain isn't adding anything. Maybe like emotionally it's helping her feel more trapped in, but then all of a sudden it's not raining. Like it's like completely dry, and you know, time has passed immediately. And you're like, oh, that's such a good device. Instead of having to look at a clock and knowing like, I'd understand, oh, it's not even bedtime yet. And then later seeing that it's 3 a.m, which is like a device we so regularly use. It's so easy to denote time passing by being like, okay, it's raining. And then hard cut, it's not raining anymore. Oh shit, man, this must be hours later. Like you already know exactly what's going on. And I think that's why they did it. And I'm like, oh God. Yes. I mean, yes, I'm taking that. I'm stealing it.
We'll tie it in. You brought up Tony Soprano, and in the pilot of The Sopranos, he gets really excited when ducks show up in his pool, and he like, runs out and walks into the pool in his full clothes. And I'm like, aw, he can't be that bad. He likes ducks. He can kill whoever he wants. He's what a sweetie. I'll follow him forever.
Yeah. And in a lot of ways, this is making me think writing is really easy.
It is. It's super easy.
It's very easy to when you get a note that's big like that, where it's like the characters aren't relatable and you have to be, you're haunted by that. And you're like, I got to start from scratch. Like we got to rebuild this character. You don't, you have like one scene,
even
scene
just
where
like,
the character,
when I was talking to the producer about this guy, like, oh, this main character, he's got to like want something. And I was like starting to think like, oh, fuck, this is going to be, I need to like start from scratch. And we were just throwing things out. And it was like, what if he wants a promotion? Yeah, anything. Who cares? Like, oh, all right. Yeah, I'll write that in. Great.
A lot of times it's also the sillier thing that they want, the better. I mean, it really helps that it's so minute and small. Like, or that like they're going about it completely the wrong way. But you still want it for them. They're not good at this. I don't know.
Community is a show where it's the whole point of the show is let's get these very different characters in a room together, being funny and having fun with each other all the time. But that show doesn't get made if you don't start with, here's this guy, Jeff Winger. He's not allowed to be a lawyer anymore. He is only at the school so he could be a lawyer. The objective of this show is for Jeff to get his law degree, trying to work as little hard as possible. And that's suddenly like, oh, cool, a show about a lawyer in community college. That is a good idea. It doesn't matter that that's not what the show is about. That needs to be the thing that like gets the show made and gets people to buy into the premise. Because if you try to tell people the show is about five weirdos from various age groups sitting together and talking and sometimes doing high concept episodes, that sounds like a big time investment that a lot of people won't be ready to make. But if it's like, what if this smooth talking lawyer had to go to community college? Yeah, I could see why that's funny. Because I'm stupid.
I mean, look at American Dad. American Dad was pitched originally as this conservative dad with a very liberal daughter and like the contention that they would have with one another. Like, you've got this really kind of self-righteous girl who's into current causes, and then you've got this dad who's works for the CIA and is very conservative, and like, oh, they're gonna butt heads a lot, I bet. Nah, turns out not.
Sometimes, every once in a while, but
they fight occasionally, I guess. But usually they're pretty much on the same page.
Yeah.
There's a movie, I don't know if you ever saw this. It was called Run, Fat Boy, Run with Simon Pegg.
No, that was directed by Michael Ian Black, or written by him?
David Schwimmer.
David Schwimmer.
It's possible that Michael Ian Black wrote it.
Huh.
No, yeah, Michael Ian Black and Simon Pegg wrote it together.
Huh, okay. That's good. I'm only half
wrong. You didn't fucking know what the movie was, but the minute I start talking about it, you already knew who wrote it.
Yeah.
This is your curse, Dan. Anyway, this is a movie that it really drove home for me when I was young, thinking about how to be a good writer and like how to make a good story. And it was, the premise is so simple. And it's this guy who wants to win back his ex, and he thinks the way to do that is running a marathon. It's so misguided and weird, but there's something very charming about how wrong it is.
Yeah.
That you're just like, yeah, run the marathon. Maybe it'll work, man. And so you don't need anything else from this guy. And you and I have talked before about how like love is an easy thing to put in a story in terms of like, you don't need any other reason why that drives a person. Whereas like if somebody wants money, it's like, well, why do they need money? When somebody wants love, everybody wants love. You can just use that. There's a shorthand to it. And so he wants love again, wants love from somebody who he lost. And now how's he going to do it? Well, he's going to try and run 23 miles. Yeah. And you're like, oh, okay. Like, you don't need to know that he's a good guy anymore. You're already on his team. You're like, oh, that poor dude. I hope it works.
23.6.
23.6.
26.2. 26.2. Sorry.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Why half marathon, 13.1. Only... Full marathon, 26.2.
I wonder if you even... Did you do a marathon?
I don't think I would correct you if I hadn't done a marathon. I think if you had mentioned that number, like,
oh, that's right.
Anyone,
you did the LA marathon.
Yeah. Everyone in our audience who's run a marathon before started typing. And then they started typing faster when I said 23.2. And then they calmed down when I said 26.2.
Do you feel those last three? Or is it just a drop in the bucket?
The last 0.2?
The ones that I shorted you just now. Yeah, I know. I gave you, I took away three.
Oh, the last 3 miles. Yeah. I would say the last 6.2 miles are all the same brand new torture. for me.
Oh,
I mean, the running gods recommend that you train is short, regular runs during the week, a few times that you're doing for speed, and your big run on the weekend, or, you know, once a week you do your big run, and it's like, if it's your first marathon, you'll build a mile at a time on your big run. You know, you're going to run 8 miles next week, 9, then maybe 10, then maybe back down to 8 again, then maybe 11, then back down again, up and up and up, back and forth in your big mileage. And then the last big run you do is 20. They never recommend that you like practice run a full marathon or even practice running 22 or 24. They all just say stop at 20 and then you, like, time it so your next big run will be your marathon. And by the time I had run 20 miles as my big run, I was like, it takes a long time, but this is fucking awesome. And if I can run 20, I could definitely run 26.2 because 6 miles has already happened so many times within 20. I just have to do the thing I did again. And that last 6.2 fucking destroyed me. Not so much so that I didn't finish. I obviously finished.
But yeah, I'd imagine that that's, I mean, 6 miles in general. If you're not thinking about, if it's divorced from the idea of a marathon, 6 miles is like, oh, that's a pretty big run I'm about to do today. I got to run 6 miles. That's a long one. That's like a 10K.
In training, it doesn't feel like, if you've been training, 6 doesn't feel like a lot of mileage. And that's why it tricks you in the marathon, because you get to mile 20 and mile 20 feels so momentous. And it feels like it's just, now it's just this last victory lap that's just going to just
fly
joyfully
by.
Carry me. Like I'm over the biggest hump. There's no other mile that I'm going to pass that is going to feel as significant as 20 in this thing. And they don't feel significant. And that's the problem. They just all feel terrible.
Ugh. It's like driving long distance where you think like you got to that big city that you know is before your destination. And you're like, and now it's all downhill. Like I don't even have to put my hand on the steering wheel. This is just like, this is just for fun here. And then you're like, how is it this long? How did I forget that this takes this long?
Driving from North Carolina to Jersey, and I get to Baltimore. I'm like, Baltimore, that only means 3 more hours. And then I'm looking at the clock. It's like, how? There's no way it's 2.5 more hours. I've driven so much. It's got to be done now. I don't want to drive anymore.
Yeah.
That means feeling very I've personal. Done it.
What is this road doing to me?
I'm ready to be home now.
Well, Dan, we didn't ever even get to a question of yours. I'm sorry.
That's,
but we did.
That's
I am
pretty okay.
Pleased that we got in, we got a little something for everybody. So the people who were really enjoying this show up until this point, they got a little gym talk. They got like some running stuff in.
Yeah.
But the people who maybe were like, why don't these motherfuckers ever talk about the one thing that they do? Maybe this was helpful. Our show is Quick Question. But you knew that. You can find Daniel on Twitter at @DOB_Inc. You can follow me, Soren_LTD. It's just a fun little thing we do. Fun little thing that we decided to do when we thought Twitter was going to last 6 months. Mm-hmm. You can follow Quick Question at @QQ_SorenandDan, or you can email us at QQ@SorenandDaniel@gmail.com. We have a great producer, sound engineer, and editor in Gabe Harder. And if you liked our theme song, that's from the incomparable Me Rex. And you can find Me Rex's music at merex.bandcamp.com.
Soren, I had a great time talking with you today.
I had a really nice time. This has actually made me feel better. I genuinely feel better.
I'm glad. I get really self-conscious talking about writing, and I'm sure I'm going to regret talking
I don't
about
think
it
so
openly. But yeah, you're probably right. I don't really think about this show when it's when it's airing or when I'm doing it.
It is embarrassing to let other people know how the sausage is made. But
yeah.
Because the process is always like a very vulnerable thing. I don't know. I think it's helpful though for other people to hear it. I think it's other people who are struggling with it. It just feels nice. Like reading On Writing by Stephen King was so nice because I was like, oh, this motherfucker was, he was terrified.
Yeah. I'm really curious I want to see our numbers for how many people stop listening when we get to the point where I say, full disclosure, I'm not going to talk about Last Week Tonight. I'm going to talk about Agents of Cracked. They're like, motherfucker.
Well, at some point, let's really do like a rundown of how our jobs work. and no. and like, here's how the this is the process. This is when we do our rewrites. This yeah. is how we punch jokes. I think actually that would be valuable. I just would be bored by it yeah. because it's something I have to do every day.
Yeah.
All right, dude.
All right. Hey. Later.
Good to talk to you. Bye.
Yeah. I've got a quick question for you. All right. I want to hear your thoughts. I want to know what's on your mind. I've got a quick question for you. All right. The answer's not important. I'm just glad that we could talk tonight. So what's your favorite?
How did you get?
If there's an answer, they're gonna find it. I think you'll have a great time here. I think you'll have a great time here.